Do you really want to know what kind of people are flooding our borders in the south and the north? Do you really want to know what happened on January 6th? Well, if you do, I suggest you join me for my interview with Jeff Rainforth, a man who was in both places and in many other historical flashpoints all over the world, on today's episode of the AJ Steele Show.
I don't want to be the boy that runs in the back. I don't want to be the kid that falls in the dark. All I really want to be is the guy that gets that girl.
Welcome to the AJ Steele Show. We discuss politics, sex, money, and everything in between. And now, here's your host, an immigrant, a self-made millionaire, an American, AJ Steele.
Everything I say and do, I'm just not good enough for you. I don't want to be the boy.
Welcome to the AJ Steele Show. Today's episode features an eye-opening interview with Jeff Rainforth, who happens to be a world-famous traveling videographer who worked with Steve Bannon and many other conservative luminaries. He is currently doing a special project documenting the illegal alien invasion of our borders, and some of the things that he told me are so scary that they will challenge everything you think you know about what goes on over there. And he didn't just talk about the border. He also told me about his experiences being embedded with Antifa in Portland and finding himself in the middle of the January 6th crowds in Washington, D.C. But he also told me an incredible story of personal redemption, which really touched my heart. And you'll be hearing this incredible conversation of ours in a few minutes. Look, I know that we've been talking a lot about Ukraine and Russia and Gaza and China lately, but we have a crisis in our very own backyard, which is much more dangerous and much more pressing than all the weapons of all of our enemies combined. I'm talking about the invasion of our southern borders, which is being facilitated by the Biden-Obama administration with help from the Democrats and the Republicans. Don't let the Republicans fool you with their smoke screens and their big speeches. Most of them, and I'm not talking about the MAGA Trump Republican types, I'm talking about the GOP, the grand old party. Most of them are 100% behind this invasion of the illegal aliens into our nation. But they're not alone. There's plenty of NGOs that are funded by greedy billionaires who hate America, from both sides of the aisle. And there's lots of so-called religious groups like the Greedy Catholic Charities USA or the Episcopal Migration Ministries and many others who do nothing but advocate for the flooding of our nation with these violent, parasitical third worlders who have no business being here. Now, some of you are going to tell me that, oh, those poor Mexicans, oh, their families are just escaping political persecution and a life of starvation. Well, first of all, let me tell you one thing. No one is starving in Mexico. And second of all, I think that our politicized Justice Department right here in America persecutes conservative white Americans no less than the justice systems in those banana republics. The way white Americans who are conservative are treated in this country is no worse than anybody in those third world nations. But regardless of that, the real truth is that many people who come here illegally are not Mexicans. They're not even South or Middle Latin Americans anymore. They are middle-aged black Muslims from Sub-Sahara. They are Arabs and Muslims from other nations like Afghanistan. Just think of all the nations ending with a stan. And that's exactly where these folks are coming from. Afghanistan, Pakistan, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Chechnya. Okay, Chechnya doesn't end with a stan, but it's a very dangerous Muslim region. The list is very long. And believe me when I tell you that all this violence and depravity that these people have in their hearts is beyond anything that we Western people could ever even begin to imagine. Just think of the machete massacres of Christians in Africa. or the unbelievable slaughter of innocent Israeli men, women, and children by the Palestinians, and you'll get the picture. That's the kind of people we're bringing here. But even more dangerous to our sovereignty are the thousands of Chinese and Russians and Ukrainians who are pouring over our borders. What kind of a normal nation other than ours would invite millions of hostile invaders to enter its borders? Now, I know you're going to tell me, oh, the Europeans do the same thing. Well, as far as I'm concerned, the Europeans are already defeated by Islam. And to be fair, I wouldn't call the Europeans too normal. They're not normal. Okay, maybe a few countries in Eastern Europe still have a brain left. Ladies and gentlemen, the United States of America is still the most powerful nation on earth, and we're not going to be defeated militarily, at least not in the near future. But many of us should remember the history of ancient Rome, which used to be the most powerful empire in the world for over 500 years, or over 1,000 years if you want to count the Byzantine Empire that came later. Rome fell because of its greedy, self-serving politicians. You know what they did? They overstretched their financial resources. They overtaxed the people. They overstretched their military on endless wars. But the one thing that, in my opinion, destroyed Rome more than anything was the fact that they allowed hordes of barbarians and other non-Roman citizens to move into the seat of the empire and to overpopulate and destroy it from within. Does any of this sound familiar to you? Because it should. Those who don't heed the lessons of history are doomed to repeat it. Okay, let me take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by Jeff Rainforth for an interview that you don't want to miss. I am AJ Steele, and this is the AJ Steele Show.
The AJ Steele Show. Think of your loudmouth best friend, hated by all the wives, because he tells it just like it is.
Your love belongs to me.
Jeff Rainforth is a professional photographer and videographer who was hired by Steve Bannon to travel the world for a film about border walls. He also happened to be on assignment in Washington, D.C. on January 6th, documenting what the Uniparty and the mainstream media liars decided to call the Trump insurrection. Late in 2022, he embarked on a self-funded border crisis tour documenting cartel trafficking of drugs and humans. Jeff, welcome to the AJ Steele Show.
Awesome. Thank you, AJ.
So I read your bio, and you sound like a combination of an Indiana Jones, a rock star, a Harley-riding Hell's Angels type, and a brave photographer who is showing America the ugly side of the illegal alien invasion. But let's start at the very beginning. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, sure. So basically, I was born into a broken family. A divorce, went through all that, went and became super shy throughout high school. I left a Christian public school of my uncle's early on, went to a public school, then got addicted to drugs, came in contact with methamphetamine, all kinds of drugs and stuff in the public school system. That's where I became addicted, thinking it was a cure for my shyness. Or when I was 16, that happened, overdosed, almost bled to death when I was 16 from an extra powerful, dose of the drug. It ate through a blood vessel in my nose. Fast forward 3 years, I'm homeless, 19, gangs trying to turn me into a drug transporter. They're getting drugs from the Mexican or supplies for the drugs from Mexican drug cartels. I'm a mess. I'm in a world of hate, and I just wanted to hurt people very badly. But fast forward a couple more years, I escaped the gang and drugs when I was 19. And I was literally scared straight. That's how I got off like the drugs, the crippling addiction. I was literally living in out of cars and broken down or half-built buildings in the middle of the winter, like eating once every 3 days, so weak you can't stand. So there's like that. And then I escape all that. I tell the gang, just, I thought they're going to kill me for like years, for like 3 or 4 years after this. I told them F off basically. And, they tried to set me up for a shooting. I got poisonous strychnine and possibly battery acid, but I don't want to go into that. When I'm 23, I am playing in a rock band. I've been off drugs since 19. And I'm living out of a warehouse where my band practices. And I stay over at a friend's house for a little get together. And in the morning, I get up and I see a huge Bible there. And I come from a Bible background. My my uncle was an archbishop. My great great granduncle was one of the founding fathers of the Assemblies of God denomination. This runs all throughout the family. And I was raised in church and in Sunday school and whatever. And so I find this big Bible at my friend's place in the morning. I'm like, you know, I'm going to check it out. So I start checking out this Bible. And I'm thinking, you know what? I always look and I loved Revelation when I was a kid because all the, you know, crazy stuff going on. And so that morning I was like, you know what? I think I'll look in the beginning of the book because I've never really looked there. So I look at Genesis, the creation account, and as I'm reading through the very first page where God created everything, it's literally the page lit up like bam, and go, and this voice goes, this is where the power is. Immediately I just cut. I stopped playing the bands. I stopped drinking. I stopped because I drank, but I didn't use drugs or anything. Quit drinking. I turned my life around like that. I was like still out, like getting into fights. I was a very violent person because of all the drugs and the gang and the streets and stuff. So like that turned my life around. Just immediately I knew, I was like, okay, this is real. God's like calling me for something. And funny thing is, when I was 5 years old, I actually accepted Jesus into my heart because we went to church all the time. And I was at church one day and they were just like, you need to have Jesus in your heart. So when I was 5 years old, it was a real thing to me back then. It was like, I believe it was real. I believe God allowed a lot of things to happen to me in my life to make me stronger because I was very shy and weak. Mm-hmm. And I became stronger through all those things. And life went on from there. And long story short, I'm on the border a lot.
Got it. So one of my favorite lines is from a Leonard Cohen song called Suzanne. I don't know if you know it, and I'm not going to sing it for you, but it goes something like this. It goes, and Jesus was a sailor when he walked upon the water, and he spent a long time watching from his lonely wooden tower. And when he knew for certain only drowning men could see him, he said, all men will be sailors then until the sea shall free them. It still gives me chills, Jeff.
Wow.
Right?
Yes.
Now, I know you had a real journey, quite a journey from being a lost soul, close to death, to a practicing Christian. I'm going to ask you a theological question, and this is not that kind of a show, but I'll ask you anyway. Why is it that only drowning men find God?
We're afraid of death. It's what's next. And I think there's something in us that just, it's when God breathed life into us, the soul, spirit, whatever it is, that reaches out at that moment. It's like, oh my gosh, we're about to die. God help us. Cause that happened to me. That's just like instinctive for me. I don't know about like atheists. Cause I have a lot of like friends here. I live in California, atheists and whatnot. They're like, I cry out for, you know, Star Wars characters, like okay, whatever.
Yeah.
But I think there's something in us. It's just innate. It's an instinctual part of what God put in us when he breathed life in this, the spirit or whatever.
Well, thank God,
yes.
God got your life back on the right track.
Exactly.
And now that you're this world famous videographer who did a lot of work for many famous media people on the right, I have so many questions to ask you about your work, especially cool. Your current work exposing the illegal alien invasion happening at our borders. But could you please tell our listeners just a little bit about your travels around the world and what you saw when you were doing the Border Walls project for Steve Bannon?
Yeah, so that was a great tour. We had just actually finished building a private border wall here in the United States. And Steve Bannon, Airman Brian Colfage sent me around the world. First, it started in Hong Kong. They're like, there was a Hong Kong protest going on over there. They're fighting the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. So they dropped me into Hong Kong first for a couple weeks, embed with them, film their stuff. That was crazy. And then the worldwide border wall tour began. So I went up to mainland China, started there at the Great Wall of China. And that was like amazing. I mean, that really, if you think about it, in a lot of places, because I was just in Lukeville, Arizona, where they're cutting the wall, border wall open all the time. You really need something like that level to stop, if you know, the cartels, the human smuggling organizations from getting in. That wall is amazing. It's insane how it took, I think, like 1,000 years. I'd have to look up the data again to complete it. But that is an immense wall, and why it's one of the, I guess, well, one of the great wonders of the world. From there, I went to, let's see, I went down into Thailand, Malaysia, and I actually just posted on my Twitter because there's something about Malaysia threatening to kill some guy over there, like because he supports Israel or something like that. I got stuck in Malaysia when I went down there. I went to the border between Thailand and Malaysia, and because there's a border wall there meant to keep out terrorists and like drug smugglers, etc. There was a terror attack 3 days after I got there. I killed like 15 people killed. They're using bombs and like automatic weapons and stuff. So it's mostly the Muslims coming in from Malaysia area. They'll hop into Thailand, cross back over the border into Malaysia. And so I went there to check that out. Then I went to, I believe it was Israel and the border with Gaza. And so I was right where the attacks happened. I was there. And so there, Israel literally has just a fence. Like basically, you know, it's like barbed wire and stuff like that on the far frontier border right next to Egypt and Gaza. Excuse me one sec.
Sure. I think it was an electronic type border. It wasn't a physical massive border that they breached, right?
Yes. There is like, they do have like sensors out there and stuff, but it's like, if you look at it, I have video from it. It's like, it's kind of like cyclone, not like extreme cyclone fencing with some barbed wire on top, but you could throw blankets over and get over it, like way out in the desert. Closer back to near Jerusalem, there's a massive wall, concrete wall with big turrets on top for like lookout towers. It's amazing. It looks like something out of the future. That is something I would also believe we'd need here. And from there, let's see, I went from all over Israel and then dropped into Hungary on the border with Serbia, because in 2015, they were having like millions of
Muslims,
Muslims from the Middle East coming up, and ISIS fighters were mixing in with them. So they built a 100-mile long electrified high voltage fence on the border with Serbia. So I went out there to see that. That's crazy. And a lot of people love that. They want that here for us. That's what I get in the comments a lot when I share my footage from like Lukeville and stuff.
Of course.
Then I went to France. They have a wall on the channel there because there were asylum seekers who come into France. There was like, it was called the jungle, I believe is what it was called.
I'm familiar with that place. Yes.
Right. And when I got there was very few like people from Africa that were still there. And because they'd broken up the jungle or the asylum camp. And then, but there's a wall there that's supposed to keep them off out of the channel because they're going into England.
Correct.
And they were worried about terror attacks. And then the final leg, I jumped into, let's say went down to Spain and then hopped over into North Africa, where Spain has a small territory called Melilla, right next to Morocco. And so they have a triple fence system there because they have the same problem with people coming in from Africa, from like, I think it was Yemen or Somalia, something like that. There was people coming up, they were worried about terrorists coming up. And so they've got this system of triple fences there. And you can only drive it. You can't get out because the military is all over. They don't allow anybody to go out and film it on foot. So I had to hire a taxi and drive up and down that. And there was like asylum people, like asylum seekers, I guess they're illegal aliens, like all over in this one area, like we were driving through. It was really crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. And the taxi driver was like in his broken English was like, yeah, we worry terrorists come from, you know, here and there. And then you see everyone here. How do we know who they are? And so that was a crazy tour. I learned a lot about, you know, different types of walls, different types of defense mechanisms that different countries have in place that we could use here. And it would be awesome. I'd love if Trump, I'm sure he will, hopefully he's the next president, and we get to implement some of these
measures, yes.
Wow, this conversation is starting to get really good. But with your permission, I'm going to have to take a break. So we will be right back with Jeff Rainforth on the AJ Steele Show.
You are listening to the AJ Steele Show, where no topic is off limits, no discussion too harsh, no truth more true. The AJ Steele Show, we tell it like it is.
Look, if you visit France these days, I think the whole place is the jungle now. And a lot of Europe is becoming very jungle-like. It's not just in regions. It's become very dangerous. And we know that walls work, and they work throughout history. But before we get a little deeper into the wall and specifically what you're doing right now, I wanted to ask you about Washington, D.C., because I know that you were there on January 6th, and you're out there filming the so-called Trump insurrection. And I also know you were in Portland, and you saw the Antifa riots, and you were in Hong Kong, like you just told us. So you know a little bit about violence. What did you see on that January 6th day in D.C.? Were these folks organized to take down the government, or were they just an angry bunch of people who felt betrayed by stolen election and just ended up going a little bit too far?
Yes, the latter is what it was, in my opinion, because I've been filming. I was the videographer for the March for Trump cross-country bus tour, which they were the people who put on the January 6th event where Trump came to speak. So we'd been on the road for across the country for 6 weeks. It went on longer for that. I joined like 6 weeks prior to the January 6th event. So I filmed all the rallies, like probably 50 different rallies across the country, zero violence whatsoever from Trump supporters. None. Nobody talked about it. There was hot political speeches and stuff like that. Yes. That was it. No, nobody, let's take over. Nothing. And so we get there and I film. I'm filming at the Ellipse, and I go through. I'd been up, I just got 6 hours sleep in like 48 hours, and I didn't know it at the time. I had COVID and I was sick as a dog, but I had a job to do, and I was filming on top of the media risers with like CNN was next to me. Literally, CNN was right next to me, and like all the other major news at MSM outlets. And so I got through filming all the speakers, and then Trump spoke at the end, and I kept filming. I filmed everything, everywhere. Walked out with the crowds to go down Pennsylvania Avenue down to the Capitol building, and so I filmed all that. That's really epic stuff. No violence whatsoever. He's happy. It's like a big party out there, literally going down. But we know that the violence started way prior to Trump even ending his speech. It started like it was, I think, 45 minutes before. That's when it all started. So I decide to stop my hotel because I'm exhausted. My job is done. My contract is up. I finished filming. So I go in, I lay down for 30 minutes, and I wake up and I turn on the TV, and I'm on the news. The Capitol, like, there's a breach at the Capitol. It's local news. So I go, I'm a journalist. I got to get my cameras back on. I have to film this. And so I just roll down there as fast as I can. I walk, it's about a mile and a half down Pennsylvania Avenue from the Willard Hotel where everybody was staying. And it's the same thing. It's kind of like a big party going down there. And when I arrive, I have to like get through masses of people. There's probably a few hundred thousand people there. And the crowds, it looked like when I turned around and filmed it, they went all the way back to the, was it the Lincoln Memorial or the monument there,
the Washington Monument. Yes.
Yes, exactly. And I was like, just epic. It was like crazy. I was like, that is a huge crowd. All peaceful. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is crazy. So the people who got violent or like fought with police and like did overturn barricades, etc., they'd been there earlier. I didn't see a lick of them because I stopped at this barrier that's probably about 100 yards away from the doors. There's like a 3-foot wall, retaining wall outside of the building. And the journalist in me, the videographer in me wanted to go up to the doors of the Capitol and see what was going on. But I was so sick, tired and sick. I didn't know I had COVID at that point. And and I was just exhausted. And something also in my head said, don't go. And I was like, yeah, it might have been like got the Holy Spirit like going, no, don't go. Even if you're a journalist, because
yeah.
legitimately, I could have gone in there as a journalist and filmed.
Or, but well, you would have been in prison right now, probably locked up.
Exactly. So that's what I'm thinking. And I'm like, yeah, I'm glad I didn't want to. But no, there was nobody violent where I was. I was, and I filmed all everywhere. I felt people were going up over the retaining wall just to get closer. I heard some guys in the bleachers. Like, there's a guy with a bullhorn. Some people think he was an agent provocateur trying to get people riled up and stuff. There's some theories about that. And I think, yeah, because there was only a few of them that were trying to do that to get people to go in, mass rush them, fill up this spot, these spaces.
Rah-rah types, yes.
Exactly. And other than that, people are just standing around like, you know, we're not supposed to fight with the cops. And they're all being peaceful, singing like Christian songs. Saying, you know, our house, you know, whose house, our house, that stuff. That's all it was. And I was in the middle of hundreds of thousands of people. Not one instance of violence did I see.
Well, I've been to a few Trump rallies, and those people are some of the nicest people in the world. Family people, men and women, Christians, Jews, black people, people with brown skin like me. Not an ounce of violence. So I know it's all BS. Now, did you personally feel in danger that day at all? Or how about this? Have you ever felt in danger in any situation you've ever been in the world?
Oh, in the world. Yes. In the world. Yeah. I thought you meant at the Trump rally. I was
well, that obviously you weren't that day, but.
The biggest, the most ever I felt in danger in all my place I've been to is going to have to be probably Portland when I covered the riots, or maybe even Sacramento where I live. Sacramento. Because I've covered the riots and looting here. There was looting right in front of me and I was filming it. They're breaking into buildings as I was filming. And I got doxxed by Antifa. Gosh, that was about just a couple years ago, I think. I got doxxed. That was when I was back home in Sacramento. So they actually put my home address, my phone number, all this stuff on. They have a tri-state bulletin board for all Antifa and like BLM to utilize. They put that up on there. I was a little paranoid back then. I know a few people who are leftists here, and they warned me about it literally before, because I'm a nice guy. I get along with like people. And I know a few people out here, and they said, Jeff, you're on a internet bulletin board for these guys. And so, but when I was up in Portland, probably because I was alone, I was by myself and I was undercover and I was trying not to blow my cover. I literally had created a whole other persona with business cards, YouTube, a channel, a website, a whole different name, whole different person. I was like, social justice, whatever. And I had all this stuff ready just in case they caught on to me.
Yeah.
And it came very close to me having to use that stuff. And, but I was very careful about that. I told Steve, I don't want to be on, you know, have my face on, because the longer when they find out who you are, they don't let you film anymore. And the whole key was be inside filming. That's the whole reason you're there. Show people what's going on inside these riots and inside these whatever's happening inside the Antifa BLM events that are going on before they become riots. So, and I knew because once they find out who you are, they will dog you and push you out and not let you and become violent. So,
I know these people. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, so I know them very well. And I get threats from them all the time. I'm not out there in the field like you. I just talk here a little bit. But they are nasty people, full of hatred. And there's no talking to them. There's no back and forth. It's their way or the highway, just like commies. Now, Jeff, I wanted to hear about your current project, which is self-funded, and it's a border crisis tour. That's what you call it. The way I first became aware of your work was when I retweeted a shocking film clip that you took at the border that showed hundreds of illegal aliens who got through to America, and none of them were Latin. They were mostly black Muslim men from Africa, mixed in with a few brown-skinned men who looked to me to be Arab Muslims or maybe Muslims from Afghanistan. Tell me about your project, and what kind of stuff did you see at the U.S.-Mexico border?
That was, I've been working on the border since 2019, and I've never seen anything like what I saw in Lukeville. I camped out in Lukeville at the port of entry from October to December, sleeping in my Jeep among them in the middle of it all, for 7 weeks total, filming like every single thing like out there day and night. I'd wake up in the middle of two in the morning, like hundreds of illegal aliens would be like walking right in front of my Jeep, like through the port. But that's what struck me the most. I'd never seen so many, I've never seen people from like around the world come in.
Yeah.
Like it was almost always, I think, was people from South and Central America or Mexico who were coming in, Hispanics.
Right.
And this was like the first time I saw a massive wave where the majority was from Africa, from African Islamic majority nations of Senegal and Guinea. And I was like, I've never seen anything like this. What's going on here? And then Border Patrol, when I was out there, would be saying, "There's we just caught some Syrians. We just got some guys from Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan. There was dudes from Pakistan here like yesterday." They literally would tell me all this stuff. And then I remember when I first got my first shot of some Syrians coming in, they alerted me at the port of entry. The Border Patrol did. They said, "There's Syrians lined up in here. We got their passports." But for the most part, it was like probably 50% and higher of young males from African nations, of the Islamic majority, African nations of Senegal and Guinea. That was the vast majority from the whole 7 weeks that I was there. And Hispanics, family units, were under 25%. Border Patrol told me that literally. And you could tell it was just, they were very, very few out there. It was from all over the world. They were coming in there, literally flying in, buying airline tickets from Africa, wherever, the Middle East. A lot of people from India and Bangladesh were coming in over there, from over there. But they'd fly in. Most everyone from that I talked to said they flew into Nicaragua and traveled north.
That's the port of entry, okay, to the America, okay.
Right. And then, but some people also said, I've heard that some flew into directly into Mexico, which would explain why so many of them had such clean clothes and it didn't look like they spent a day traveling. Like, this is a long journey from across the world.
Of course.
And so somehow some of them got through just in designer clothes, and we'd find Gucci bags and
really,
and like they look, if you look at all my photos, because I've got thousands of photos and hundreds of videos, a lot of these people are look like they just got off like the catwalk. And it's like, what's going on? You're asylum seekers?
Yeah. Where did they get the money for these tickets, right?
Exactly, so, right. Who's paying? That's another big question, is are the in which NGOs are the NGOs like dropping money in their, you know, wallets, or are they doing it through you know, Bitcoin or what? Who knows? I don't know personally, but somebody is.
The AJ Steele Show will be right back.
AJ Steele, not right, not left, just right.
So if I was an enemy of America, let's say I was President Xi of China or the Ayatollah of Iran, what would I really do different than opening the border wide open to this endless invasion of fentanyl? We didn't even talk about that yet, which is killing our youth. And then on the other hand, we're allowing millions of military age men to pour right into our country. I mean, it's bad enough we're getting the cartels and all the illiterates from, you know, from South America, but now we're getting the violent Africans and Muslims. And believe me, and I think you know this, these people would rape somebody or kill somebody at a drop of a hat. But maybe it's even worse. We're getting loads of Chinese people and Russians and Ukrainians. Why is Biden and his boss Obama doing this to us?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. This is boss Obama. It's like Obama's third term we're in right now.
Right.
Because everybody, that's the big thing. That is, you know, it's funny that they don't just say it. If there's a legitimate reason, they just come out and say it. You would think they would literally say it's because we need more workers for, you know, in the low, like, skilled areas of the economy. They don't say that, though. They don't say it for whatever reason. And it's funny you mentioned that they could fight us, because I talked to some Africans from Guinea who said they were joining the Marines. Literally, I interviewed them. They asked. They were like really cocky dudes and like younger guys. And one guy was like just like he was like eyeballing me, like giving me the stink eye, like he wanted to kill me. Literally, everybody picked up on this in the video. They're like, this dude looks like he wants to kill you. Literally.
They're scary. They're scary.
Yeah, there's people. A lot of men, young men out there who were just like, you'll see the photos if you go to my my ex account, Liberty Clarion, and it's crazy. But these guys were like, I was like, ask them where they're from, what they're doing, how they got here, what they got. They're like, oh, we got phones and we got address to go to and we go to New York City. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, so what are you going to do for work? And they're like, oh, work. Oh, we join the U.S. the military. I'm like, what? And they're like, yeah, U.S. Marine. Like they got this, like they have a French African accent.
Of
like
course. That was pretty good, by the way. That was Senegalese, right? Is that Senegalese?
Yes.
There you go.
And I was like, wow, are you sure? Really? You can do that? And I was like, are you strong enough? You think you're good enough? You think you're strong enough? You know, because some of these guys, they don't have a lot of meat on their bones. Jinjagi. Like, I forget what they said.
It was, okay, now you're starting to sound like Arnold, though. So you gotta work on your accent.
Get to the chopper.
Exactly.
You at the body, Richter. So, yes.
Yeah.
So these guys literally said they're joining the Marines, and they're like, "Welcome to Joe Biden, America." You know, I was like, "Wow, this is really crazy stuff." That went viral. That that video that I posted.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, but the majority of these guys are very young. Very healthy men, guys from Africa. And it's like, well, what are they going to do? And especially we know, we've seen some of the assaults already back in New York, where the police officers were assaulted by migrants or illegal aliens. And then we know what's going on in Europe. Everybody brings up Europe when I show my photos and stuff and videos. They're like, this Europe's already overrun. I literally talked to a couple who came out to the port when Arizona Governor, Democrat Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs came out after the port of entry closed. She came out like 3 days after or 4 days after to make a speech or whatever. And so I rolled up out there, like there's only two other journalists out there. And I was like yelling at her questions, and they like hit her away and took her into the CBP offices at the port to get her away from me. But this couple came out, and they were from Sweden. The one guy, this guy, he had left America when he was very young and went to Sweden, found a wife, started a family, started a business. They were very successful. And then they fled because so many people from the Middle East and Africa had come up and had become so violent over there. I literally have them on film, like talking to them. And they're like, we saw the writing on the wall. So we fled. We came back. She became a citizen legally. And then their daughter came like about a year later, I think. So we know it's happening in Europe. And that's the kind of the crazy thing, that I've met somebody that was literally fleeing to America what's starting to happen here now.
Yeah. Scary. Jeff, we're starting to run out of time, and this conversation has been a real eye-opening interview for me. Where can our listeners learn more about you and get to see more of your work?
So I'm on X at Liberty_Clarion, Clarion. You can visit my website. Just look up Jeff Rainforth, Rainforth. My website's out there. I've got a Substack called Rainforth Report, where I put a lot of stuff on. I'm on YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, all over the place. If you look up Jeff Rainforth or Rainforth Report. But X, I'm working on my X account. That's my big project right now, trying to get it up there.
Yeah.
Liberty_Clarion is where I'm at on X, and that would be awesome.
Great. Now, before we end this conversation, do you have some final words to say to the audience of the AJ Steele Show?
I would say a lot of people ask, what do we do? You know, what do we do? This is like chaotic. It is a crisis. And from like calling our members of Congress, yes, that's helpful. Coming from my background and having seen like the unrest, like overseas and here at home, and the riots and stuff like that. One thing I noticed about the left, they're very organized, and they have to have their stuff together. I would say get together locally with men and women patriots to and protest stuff and be loud and vocal. That's one of the things that the left does better than us, I think, is they're very, very loud and vocal. Don't get violent, be vocal. It works. It's the whole axiom, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. Sure. And it's absolutely true. Meet up with people, and it's okay to be angry. I mean, very angry. Use your voice to get in politicians' face. Yell, yo, what are you doing? I mean, I'm that kind of person. I think this is what the level we need to go to. Do not engage, like do anything crazy, because that's, you know, that's not where we need to go. But you can definitely be loud. Get with other patriots and be loud and angry and say, we don't want this. I think we need to move to another level of activism and civil disobedience, nonviolent.
Oh, I agree with you, Jeff. And we've done plenty of shows on that and how we should be doing civil disobedience. I think we're just too apathetic. The conservatives, you know, we like our lives, we like our families, we like our jobs, and we're too apathetic, but we need to show some passion. Otherwise, we're going to lose this country. Jeff Rainforth, it was really great talking to you, and I hope that you stay healthy and safe, and I hope that you keep doing the great work that you do, and you continue opening our eyes to the dangers on the border. I really appreciate you coming on the AJ Steele Show, Jeff.
Awesome. Thank you so much, AJ.
Great.
God bless.
Thank you.
All I really want to be is a guy that gets a girl. All I really want to be. All I really want to be is a guy that gets a girl.
The AJ Steele Show. Copyrighted 2024.